Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hey, you glorious winners. This is a power smash of an episode with the incredible comedian and author Shappy Khorsandi. Straight out the door, though, as ever, thanks for listening. Please tell people about the podcast if you like it, and why not rate, review, and subscribe. Every time you give it 5 stars, it means that other people get to learn about it more and shit, apparently. So for all the word sharing, thank you. Thank you. If you've got spare actual wedge, you can become one of my patrons. They/you get loads of exclusive content and discounts to live shows and guest recipes and stuff like that. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. By the way, I'm not ill. I've just recording this when I've only just woken up. And I think I'm probably like another octave deeper. Anyway, I also need to tell you that I'm on tour with my show Hench all around the UK, Ireland, and I'm going to Melbourne. They're all selling out, which is amazing. I've been to Bristol and Leicester and Corsham and Bridgewater, and it's been really fun so far at time of recording. But now I'm going to some slightly bigger venues. So this week that you're listening to this, I'm going to be in Colchester on Tuesday the 25th. There are other dates as well. I think there might still be some tickets for Canterbury, but only one or two. But in Colchester, there will still be tickets, I'm sure, because I'm in a massive venue for me. So if you're anywhere near Essex especially, why don't you come to that? Or send someone that you know who's in Essex. Okay, details of all of the tickets for that stuff is all on my website, jessicafostercue.com. Right. Before we get into this week's podcast with Shappy, I need to do probably my most serious warning that I've ever had to do for an episode yet. Because considering we're two comedians, Shappy and I, this is an episode where I got quite sad during it and felt sad after it. You need to be warned that we talk very openly about eating disorders, not just disordered eating, but full-on bulimia and binging and starving, but really bulimia most specifically. And this is the first time where I've spoken to someone who has just outright said that they're not in a great place in terms of recovery and that their troubles are very much ongoing. And it's there's some detail in that. So please, you know, obviously nothing is glamorized. It's just very sad. But please know that if you're someone who's going to be especially upset by that, let alone potentially triggered by that, please know this might not be the episode for you. If you're okay, however, then know that there are obviously also moments of funniness and lightness and learning and love and culture. And it's a very powerful conversation, which is why I'm really glad we had it. I love Shappi for her heart and her candor. We met at her house and we wolfed some really nice lunch from Wagamama's.
It's on.
Yay.
Thanks for having me around to your house.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for coming.
I'm going to take pictures of this grub, but we've got Wagamama's off to Liveroo.
Should I have been a bit more civilised and put it all in serving dishes?
No, I think I can't be asked, and I wouldn't be asked. I can't be asked. Can you be asked?
I got a plate.
You got plates and water in glass, because we're grown-ups.
Yeah, I did reach for the plastic.
I did reach for
the
plastic.
You're the only adult that's... Because I've just been writing my book.
Yeah.
That's kind of been in my house that isn't one of my neighbours or one of my mummy chums. I know you are a mummy, but you know what I mean by
that. Yeah, we don't know each other from that.
No.
We know each other from work.
Work friends.
What is everything? That's a salad. That's really obvious that that's a salad.
Yeah.
Patronising. Vegetable gyoza, bang bang cauliflower.
I love bang bang cauliflower.
I didn't know if you were veggie, but I sort of am.
Yes.
Selfishly.
I am as much as I can. If I can avoid meat, I do.
Yeah.
I was vegan for a long time. A long time. It's only about a year and a half.
Okay. That's a long time. That's longer than I managed.
Time, yeah. And I found it a lot of fun.
Okay.
But then I relapsed on eggs.
Eggs are amazing, aren't they?
Eggs are great. I don't think I'll ever give up eggs.
No, I think even when I come close to having days and days of being vegan, I'm more... It's... Eggs that will tip me over the edge.
Do you know, the thing about being vegan, I didn't even do it for animal welfare.
I did it for the environment.
Did you?
Mm.
I just found it made me feel really good.
Oh, right.
It made me feel really clean.
Did it?
From the inside.
I wonder if that's, how much of that is...
psychological.
Yeah.
Maybe
you were cooking more and eating less processed stuff or something.
100%. And also, it forced me to eat so many vegetables.
Right, and that's so good.
And I love aubergine, so I just like had an excuse to eat aubergine all the time.
It's the best, isn't it?
But
that's my favourite vegetable, aubergine.
Aubergine's amazing. I'd love to make you some Iranian aubergine one day.
Yes, please. I read your book years ago. Maybe I've written about this. Your first book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you.
It was years before we ever met.
I loved it so much recently. Yeah.
I was just a super fan, Shappi.
Oh.
And I loved the book, but it made me so hungry. And actually, I almost was like, can I contact her just to say, where can I go in London and eat food like you've described in this book?
Do you know, as I was writing that book, I didn't even realise I was writing so much about food.
Mm.
It was when people read it afterwards and a couple of TV companies approached me for, like, cookery programmes. I was like, I'm not really that into cooking.
Yeah.
I am, weirdly, I am now. But at the time, I was like, no.
no.
No. But, yeah, I don't think I can talk about being Iranian or my family without food. Sorry, my dog's just put her head right between my legs. Sort of adorable and sort of distracting.
Really jealous of the Wagamamas. Got such a nice doggy. I always start this by asking if you've eaten anything particularly sort of memorably brilliant or awful in the last few weeks.
Yes, right.
But if you've been down a writing hole, maybe that's interesting as well. I'd like to know how, when you're deep in the middle of writing a book, if that changes the way that you eat.
Yeah, food's really important.
Yeah.
Food is so important because it's that kind of like what you look forward to and breaks up your day. I can't do without bread in the mornings. If I don't have bread in the morning, I feel sad.
Yeah.
I feel really sad and nothing's worth that sacrifice.
Yes.
And what I do find difficult is, like a lot of mothers of young children, I hang around a lot with other mums.
Yeah.
And it astounds me how much of the conversation is about weight loss.
No. Still.
It astounds me.
Well, like at the school gates.
It, you've lost weight, you haven't lost weight, oh, yeah. you look great, oh, look at you, skinny mini,
yeah.
all of that. So it's sort of like, without you realising, makes you kind of think, maybe I should cut down on carbs, but I won't ever do that with bread.
Good.
But a memorable meal I had, actually, recently, fairly recently, a couple of months ago, I went to Mumbai, I went to India for the first
wow.
time.
Wow. And for work or holiday?
It was for work. I went with Soho Theatre.
Oh, wow.
So I did a couple of shows there as part of this literary festival, and it was really exciting because I love... I'm a trustee at the Soho Theatre, so oh, I am wow. very emotionally invested
okay.
in all the new venues that they are looking at. And the India thing, I thought, oh, my goodness, Soho in India is going to be amazing.
Mm.
So anyway, so I went to Mumbai... Only for a few days. I'd never been to India before, have you?
No, I'd love to.
Oh my goodness, it blew my mind.
Really?
Yeah, I had to, I sort of formally apologised to my brother for all the years I've taken the mickey out of him for being one of those real kind of India hippies, like, oh, unless you've been to India, you just don't know yourself. And what I realised that when, I mean, I've only been to Mumbai, but even in the short time that I was in Mumbai, it sort of forces you to deal with parts of yourself
right.
that you don't have to deal with here or anywhere else I've ever been.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, a billion people is a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people there.
And so, yeah, and then what just the intensity of how packed it is or the disparity between how people are living their lives.
Yeah.
That's the things I've heard people say is that it's like you will get your absolute mind blown by... Just the normality of the extremity of poverty next to such extraordinary decadence.
Wow, that, there you go. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
You are a very articulate woman. Well done.
Thanks,
you should make a living from words.
Did you... and you ate incredible food there? I just assume.
I did, so... Iranian food is very herby.
Okay.
And Indian food is very spicy.
Yeah.
And there's a Indian-Iranian restaurant in Mumbai called the Britannia.
Okay.
And the decor is really, really kitsch and cute. Like they've got like, you know, the Iranian Zoroastrian wings with some like Indian paintings next to a life-size cardboard cutout of... William and Kate.
Oh, God. That's really brilliant.
It's brilliant. And then my brother said to me...
A painting of them up like idols.
Yeah. He said, please, please go to the Britannia and have the food there. It's run by this Iranian family that have been in India for 90 years.
Okay.
I was like, okay. And he said, they've got a really special version of Zereshk Polo. So Zereshk Polo... is my favourite Iranian dish.
Okay.
It's saffron rice made with these little berries called barberries, which used to be used a lot in British cooking.
Right, but it's
that they stopped growing barberry and it stopped being a thing.
Just stopped eating them, maybe. Yeah. There's loads of...
And you... they're sort of sweet and sour. You know, there's little berries and you mix them up with sugar to make them a bit sweeter.
Right.
And then you cook them with a really lovely slow-cooked chicken. And he goes, they do a really special version of Zereshk Polo. And I went to this place in India with the guys from Soho Theatre, Stephen Mark. And we got their berry rice.
Yeah.
And I was like, it just looks like normal Zereshk Polo. Why is this different to any... Oh, my God. I ate it. I actually cried. It was so amazing. It was like Iranian mixed with masala.
Oh, wow.
And the flavours of these two places just... They just ran to my fingertips and my toes, and I was very emotional about being in India anyway, because my brother, who I'm very close to, now lives in Rome, which makes me sad, so I miss him more than I normally do.
Yeah.
And he spends loads of time in India. And so I just felt like this real connection with my brother.
Oh!
And eating this food in this amazing country that was kind of doing my head in, but I was loving it at the same time. And it was emotional. I get very emotional about food. And so,
I do. That's without doubt the most moving and interesting answer anyone's given me to the most brilliant thing that you've eaten recently. I mean, it's extraordinary to go somewhere that extraordinary, be so blown away by it, and then have an eating experience that... that's moving because it takes you to somewhere else, back to somewhere else as well.
And someone else.
As if it's not enough that you've...
That was... And also, I found out Bombay duck is fish. That blew my mind. Never knew.
I didn't know that.
No, Bombay duck is fish. Yeah.
Wow.
Because that was the thing about in being in India, that the disparities you talked about, that you see this little kid who's probably no more than four curled up on a street corner, and then literally 10 paces away from him, there's another four-year-old kid who's been smothered with kisses by its parents, dressed beautifully and bundled off into a nice car to go do something lovely.
Yeah.
And they can see that other sleeping four-year-old, and you can see that other, everyone can see. And we walk on by.
Yeah.
And that, just seeing that, you're like, your eyes seeing that is, I'd never experienced that before.
Right.
It was wild. And you can't just go up to that four-year-old kid because it's just, everyone's milling around. And all you can do is go and give them money. But you can't pick
such
them
a short
up and take them home.
Fix,
and, And anyway, so all of that and talking to... And then, you know, later that evening, going to the, you know, Deputy High Commissioner's house for dinner.
Wow.
And then seeing all that and people there and...
Fucking hell.
And it's, yeah, so that food. And then I came back here and I went on about it.
Mm.
And my brother saw my tweet and he goes, did you know that Dishoom, the restaurant chain, base a lot of their dishes on this restaurant?
Oh, really?
So I contacted Dishoom and they sent me, bless them, they're so nice, they sent me their cookbook, and in it is there's pages about the Britannia, and they have a photo of the guy that I met there.
Wow!
And I took Mr. Kohinoor, and I took a photo with him, and they've got this there. It's all there. And I was like,
oh,
right.
My God.
And then I tried to go to Dishoom, but I had a really long queue.
Oh, it's always such a long queue.
I can't queue to dance or eat.
I had an incredible brunch there once. They do really amazing breakfasts.
Did you have to queue for ages?
No. But I think it was a weekday morning. That's when to get in there.
Mm.
But then I don't know if they'll do that. Do they do a version of that? I can't pronounce it.
Zeresh put a berry rice, yeah, but they use cranberry.
Aha. Because you just don't get Barbaries anywhere here.
You do in Iranian shops.
Aha.
And you do in, there's a shop called Kuddi in West Ealing. It's a Turkish shop, but it's got every Middle Eastern thing you could possibly want in there.
Awesome.
So you get packs of Zeresh in there.
Love.
Really nice. I've got some here.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got Zeresh. Sprinkle on your rice when you get home.
You did Celebrity MasterChef.
Mm.
I want to talk about it generally, but I just randomly want to know what happens to all the food. Is it like Bake Off and all the crew come and eat it? Fine. So it doesn't just get binned.
Well, then a lot of it does because it's cooked badly on the celeb one. But the crew eat it. But what happens on it? The food gets cold. By the time you make it, and then they have to do takes and retakes and reset up, it's an ice cold meal. And the studio was freezing. And I feel a bit sad about that programme. I feel it was a bit of a wasted opportunity because I was pregnant.
Oh, shit.
Early stages of pregnancy.
Oh, secret early pregnant.
Yeah, and it was just, I wanted to eat more than I wanted to cook.
Yeah, fair enough.
And a lot of the stuff was making me just sick.
Oh, I was going to say, it's knackered and queasy.
It was knackered and queasy.
Worse.
And I just moved into this house as well. So I had all my stuff in boxes.
Oh, shopping.
So my dream is that they invite me back again one day. But I'd love to do that now, not pregnant, and also way better cooking skills.
Yeah.
Do you love cooking?
Love cooking. It's taken me years to... I've always loved cooking, but it's taken me years to get confident at it and learn that... Because I can cook really badly if I'm trying to... I still fall foul of it sometimes, try and cook something very complicated very quickly. And then it's always shit. I have to take time out for it. And I'm getting much better at going... I don't know. It just takes a bit of planning, doesn't it? Or going... You don't have to make this extraordinary lunch. You can just have, just defrost something, or I don't know.
Do you ever do batch cooking?
I do quite a lot of
that's
that.
That's good.
I don't know, I do things like, God, this is so banal, I'm worried it's really banal. I can cut it out maybe, but I do lots of like making one person portions of things for babysitters and stuff, so my freezer's full of that.
Oh.
But then I feel guilty eating it, so you end up cooking, I don't know. At the moment, I am...
Wait a minute. So when you have a babysitter, you think what they're going to have for dinner. I love you.
I really love feeding my babysitters.
That is somebody who is kind and generous. Seriously, people who like to feed other people are the best people.
My main babysitter is my friend's mum who lives around the corner, and I love this, and I admit it sounds like I'm being rude about her, but I have so much respect for it because I love cooking for her so much. She's got quite confident about telling me what she does and doesn't like in my cooking. Brilliant. In a way, we should be like, well, I loved that bit of the cake, but I didn't like what happened to the pineapple, so I really had that. And then she'll critique thing, like item by item things that I've made for her.
So Rudy had that bit.
Yeah, so he had that, and he did ask for chocolate, so I did give him chocolate. Like, oh, Sue! So
scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Honestly, I don't play to win ever anything. I like to enjoy the process, and I found that really tough when I'm a celebrity to get me out of here.
Right.
I didn't understand why everyone's taking it so seriously.
Well, how can they enjoy any of their life if that's how they live? I genuinely think that.
Win. And instead of being a bit like sort of, I don't know, just I kind of enjoy being a bit of a loser, I think.
Such a funny way of putting it. I had a fascinating conversation recently with someone who'd met a sports psychologist who was saying there are, if you just take footballers, there are certain types of brains where you can get them to picture scoring a goal, you know, and through that visualisation they'll start scoring loads more goals.
Yeah.
But he said that the majority of people, you know, who try and practice that kind of stuff on themselves, you know, people who do dream boards and vision boards and stuff like that, are missing the mark because most of us are process-based. Like, and you need to show, you know, most footballers, you'd actually need to show them how to get the ball anywhere near the goal. You can't just show them the end.
Right.
And I was like, it's so interesting. I think I've fucked up in loads of elements of life, you know, until realising that, because I'm not at all goal focused either.
No.
I've always hated being asked what my 1 year plan is or my 5 year plan is. I couldn't give a fuck about winning things.
Mm.
But same like in terms of, you know, a life of a finally finished life of dieting, thinness, that was a goal. That was like the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Your process is fucked.
Yeah.
It comes down to that enjoying the journey, isn't it? It's that hippie.
Oh, I found myself watching Mrs. Doubtfire recently, and then there's that bit where she gets ready to go out with him, and I was like, oh, she's nice and thin. I shall be that thin one day. And I went, why are you still thinking like that, woman?
Oh, God, it's so deeply ingrained into our...
Why are you still thinking?
Well, but also, it's January, and I think it's sometimes really hard to clock how toxic the millions of conversations, like you're saying with the mums all the time, you know, if everywhere you go, all around you, actually still, outside of our woke bubble of comedians or media types or London types, even then, like just real life, people are still talking about diets and weight loss constantly, especially women. It was on, Sean Keaveney on Six Music in the afternoon, if I'm doing, especially like if I'm in and cooking or doing admin. But he had Tom Kerridge on, and they were, I mean, it felt like hours. They were just talking about weight loss, and because Tom's got a new diet book out, that's his thing now. For the whole afternoon, I was like, I know that even listening to this is sowing some sort of neggy seed. Not, I wouldn't go so far as to say toxic anymore, but negative little seed of unhappiness that's going to... It just taints the way you think about everything, even if you've got to a really nice place with yourself.
I was with it on a WhatsApp group with a bunch of friends, and one of them had joined a slimming club.
Right.
That everyone talks about.
Mm.
And she lost loads of weight. She looked great. And so a few more had joined, and then they were on this WhatsApp group discussing getting there that evening or whenever.
Right.
And then one of them put, oh, wow, are we all going? Oh, it's only Shappy left. Now, I had not said one word in the discussion. I hadn't expressed a desire to lose weight. I hadn't joined in. But they noticed that I wasn't. And just as though it's like they're going to, you know, going on a hike or something.
That's awful.
Yeah, it really upset me. I left the group.
I was going to say, I don't think I could have been in that group as soon as someone started talking about going to a seminary.
I've never told them why I left the group.
Yeah.
It
should be pretty fucking obvious.
I'm not sure.
And maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's not.
They don't get... I think because when people don't have disordered eating, they kind of think it's normal. But I have messed up eating. I really struggle with bulimia.
Right.
I still struggle with bulimia. Yeah. And then if I say, oh, look, guys, you know, this sort of triggers bulimia in me. Like if you're...
It's
like a smoker.
Yeah.
If you haven't smoked anymore and you go out and all your friends are blowing like their smoke in your face, yeah. it's not much deeper than that. It's, you know, no one needs to understand it any deeper than that.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, don't be silly, you look great. And it's like,
fuck off. That's not what it's about.
That's not what it's about. And you're not listening, you're not hearing. And yeah. But that's okay. You just have to remove yourself from some situations, don't you? It's the only way.
Yeah. Yeah, you said we did a podcast together before for Kate Thornton, was it? Yeah, White Wine Question Time.
Yeah.
Great name.
Yeah.
Great name. Great lady. But you were really honest on that, about having a really complicated history with eating disorders and stuff. But you also said that I'm a Celebrity set your recovery back as
Oh, my God.
That's so interesting.
Whoa.
Because you inadvertently... shrunk so much during that,
yeah,
because there wasn't anything to eat really.
Yeah, I lost about a stone, and right. I was not very much when I went in.
Yeah,
I don't weigh myself, but I was a size 10 when I went in, and a size 8 when I came out.
Fucking hell, tiny and tinier.
And I had a flat stomach for the first time in my life.
Oh God.
But it was a flat, wrinkly stomach because the weight was lost so quickly. Mm. And I was fitting into these like tiny little dresses, and I knew this is the awful thing. I knew that how quickly I'd lost it meant that the minute I start eating again, it'll come back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I came out first because I am a winner.
Yes. And you were like, yes, you have to stay my family. There.
Yeah, and so they fly your family out, and you stay in a 5-star hotel for 2 weeks. The sooner you come out. The longer you get in the hotel, the longer you have, which is why I say I won
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Right? And
that's so cool.
It was great. It was amazing. It was just a bit, and you get per diems as well.
Oh, nice.
You just like, get paid like random money just for your dinner. So it was amazing.
Get
in. Pocket money. So I knew that, and then in my mind I was like, I want to stay this thin for when I go back to London.
Oh.
But I knew I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so I had to, in 2 weeks, of course I put it all on and more.
Fucking
and it absolutely picked me up by the scruff of the neck and hurled me into a pit of bulimia and I couldn't get out for about a year and a half.
Oh, fuck, shopping.
It was really awful.
Oh, Lord. I didn't realise a year and a half.
It was a long time, but it's not all... You know, I've never been where I used to be with it, like in my 20s. I'm still functional, whatever. Mm. It's just like, honestly, if people aren't bulimic, or have a disorder.
Yeah.
I just say it's in some ways no different to being so disappointed in yourself because you've had a cigarette after not having a cigarette for 5 years. And the shame and the self-hate that, and then you go, I'm not going to do it. And then you do it again. And then you find yourself like...
Yeah.
At the back of the house with your fag, and it's just like, why am I doing this? Why am I so strong in so many areas? And then you realise, you know, you have to be quite strong to relapse because it really hurts to put yourself back in that situation. So it's, and I've had to talk to my kids about it as well because they notice things go missing. Mummy, where are the Kit Kats that were there? Mummy went, and I have to say to them, guys, really sorry, but if we want a treat, we have to buy that one treat, and that gets eaten then and there for you.
Right, yeah.
And we can't have, you know, loads and loads of biscuits and stuff in the house at the moment because, you know...
I'm not very well at the moment.
I'm not very well at the moment, and my boy gets it, and he understands it, and, you know, it's... You have to be honest with them, I think.
Yeah.
Because that just adds more secrets, more lying, more whatever. Yeah. It just adds
which is more shame. Which is in itself the deepest sort of, the sharpest bit of the thorn, I think.
Yeah.
It's the shame.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think it's pretty rare that someone, that any, there's, I think there's hardly any women that don't have any problems with eating at all when it comes to sort of weird attachments of, what objectively are weird attachments of shame to different types of eating. But because it's so pervasive, the message, the simultaneous, I think even if you've had no, you know, you've never had an eating disorder, I think most people have flirted with some disordered eating in the sense that we're constantly being told not just that thinness is ideal and it's the mission we should all be on, but also that foods are good or bad.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's only, I feel quite middle groundy with language stuff because I like the idea of a future where there's words we can't say.
Mm.
Because I think it's all about context and ownership. And but I am starting to really see how the implications of not just like, you know, diet companies that use words like sins and stuff like that for food. I mean, that's so overt.
Like,
but
that
even,
is like,
yeah,
whoa.
Over a big chunk of my shows about it.
These are my sins. Oh, God.
It's horrific. But even down to like junk food, dirty burgers, stuff like that, like we grotify and we're so neggy about even that. It's all, it's just so hard to totally make yourself have this sort of functional, cheerful relationship with eating when in a million different ways, day in, day out, we're being told, no, it is complicated and you should be thin.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm keen as well to hear about your journey of recovery itself. I've spoken a lot about my shit on this podcast, so anybody listening will already know it. But if this is the first episode you're listening to, I have a history of binge eating disorder and I've flirted with bulimia and starving myself in my teens. But the one persistent disordered eating type for me would be binge eating. But a therapist years and years ago who I was seeing for a heartbreak said to me, should we talk about eating? And I was like, yeah, okay. And she was like, I mean, how is your eating? And I was like, fine, love it. And she went, oh, okay, great. You know, so tell me what you've eaten today. And I hadn't binged that day. This was like the late morning, but I felt like she'd asked me to take my clothes off. It was the most, I hated her for it. And she clocked that she'd hit a nerve, do you know what I mean? And I was like, oh. And both of us were sort of stunned by my reaction. And I was like, oh, shit. You know, but I wasn't ready then. And it was years later, sort of in the run-up to starting this podcast, I thought, I've got to get my cards on the table if I'm going to
talk about this.
So I have CBT, not just about that. I originally thought I'd start having it to help feel less stressed about work or in control of my time and my energies. But in sort of as a byproduct, I've been working through it with her for a couple of years now. But I wondered about if you'd be up for talking about what your recovery has looked like as a journey. Has it involved any people, books, therapy? Have you gone it alone? I don't know. I find it fascinating. I've spoken to people who have had a million different
things to help them. Honest and say it's not great at the moment. At the moment, I'm not in a good place with recovery.
Right.
And for me, it took me so many years to realise and understand that throwing up was the tip of the iceberg. I thought that was the problem.
Right.
I wasn't seeing the journey. The overeating.
Right.
I didn't realise that. When I was a student, I remember I used to shop specifically for binges.
Yeah.
And I'd do the secret thing. And that all started at uni and intensified. And there was no internet then. I had no way of reaching out to anyone in a similar situation, similar position. And the way I describe it now, one of my favourite films is American Werewolf in London. Or any cheesy werewolf film. Not that I'm saying that film is cheesy.
It's pretty cheesy. I love it. I mean, it's great. Yeah.
I love it. A bit where he's really happy, all high, all fine, and then he starts to turn into the werewolf and he sees his nails get longer and he's aware of it and he's like, what's going on?
Mm.
But he can't stop it.
Yeah.
And then he goes from being a conscious human to then morphing into the animal.
Yeah.
And then there is no control. There is no... there's no helping him. There's no saving him. So I always see myself when I go into a binge.
Yeah.
As, oh, the werewolf thing's happening.
Right.
You know, it's happening. I'm getting that feeling. I'll be at my computer. The kids will be in bed. Oh, there goes. It's happening.
Yeah.
And what I have neglected to do, which is what I learned in recovery, is that unless you put your recovery first, nothing else works.
Right.
So for years I've been saying, yeah, but I haven't got time. And I've got this deadline. And I've got a show to write. Yeah. And I've got the kids and I've got no babysitter. And then it all falls apart. And I, you know.
Yeah.
And so today, actually... when I was out walking my dog, I thought to myself, right, it is now non-negotiable. I have to go back into 12-step recovery program. Because I did 12-step. That's the thing that changed my life. I've never got past step two.
Right.
But for years and years and years, I went to meetings.
Right.
But I've never got past step two. I found
that. And this is different to the 10 steps of intuitive eating.
Yeah.
This is like an anonymous group.
Yeah, okay. This is an anonymous group for,
And,
sorry, I'm being cagey because one of the rules is...
You don't talk about Fight Club, I get it.
Yeah, because,
But it's good, I think, for people listening to know that there are groups, if you need to Google, that you could go to without needing... I assume you don't need money. I mean, I think that's the thing.
Free.
I talk to so many people who are like, therapy, this book, and you're like... All good, but you have some privilege to be able to afford that.
Therapy's expensive.
Yeah, it is.
So I remember I was about 31 or 32, 31 when I met the man I married, who I'm now divorced from.
Yeah.
But I had been, you know, in this cycle of binging all throughout my late teens and I feel like bulimia stole my 20s. And that was a time where, as a comedian, I should have been really working hard and enjoying, you know, being on the circuit and you know, having the attention that I was getting. I should have enjoyed it, but I was locked in bulimia and I didn't. Oh, it was all a blur. And there'd be days where I would, like, be living this bedsit that I lived in and, like, you know, throw up sort of five times in one day and then go and do a gig. And it's like, wow, the last place you should be right now is on stage with people looking at you. It was a really bad state I was in, a really bad state, and mixed with a lot of boozing. And so when I was 31, I fell in love. And by then, I'd sort of really realised that something needs to be done.
Yeah.
And he was really supportive and he read everything he could about it. And I found this. I didn't know there's a 12-step for people like me, and I found it and I went to it. Mm-hmm. And I just sat in this room, and I'm a joiner in, you know, I like a group. Do you know what I mean? Find yourself a space, sit down.
Lovely. And when's it my turn to speak?
And I just found everyone in there really normal.
Yeah, of course.
They all looked normal. They were from all walks of life.
Yeah.
And it was peaceful and everyone spoke and I didn't say a word. Like, first few sessions, I just sat there. And then I remember I just went every day for, because they said, like, go to three sessions before you decide it's for you. And I think it was the third session where this guy was talking about, I'm not sharing anything deep about someone's but he was saying about going to the anxiety he felt going into John Lewis to exchange something. And it suddenly occurred to him that it's not going to be John Lewis himself. Really made me laugh.
He'll be upset that he'd rejected his present from John.
Absolutely. And that really made me laugh. And also it just brought to my attention that, you see, nowadays people talk about anxiety. I didn't have a word for it. I thought I was on my own.
Mm.
Every social event was anxious. If someone, you know, I just felt so shy talking to people. If someone didn't greet me warmly, I thought that my world was coming to an end because I'd obviously upset this person. I used to lose sleep over people not returning my phone calls.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, actually lose sleep rather than think, well, they're busy, or, well, they're not that arsed. Whereas now I can go, oh, well, they're busy or they're not that arsed. That's fine, move on. They don't rule my life. These people don't rule my enjoyment of my life. And so I realised, and then as I just committed to these meetings. So this is in my early 30s. And then that summer, it was 2006, I went to Edinburgh and I was like the toast of Edinburgh. My career was going great.
Yeah.
And everything started for me. And every interview they'd say, well, you were on the circuit for a long time before anything happened to you. And I was like, yes, because I went into recovery and everything, you know, was clear and I had a life.
Mm.
And I was enjoying the stuff that I was doing. Then my husband and I broke up and I just sank straight back into it. But never, ever like it was before.
Okay.
No, it's never been like it was in my 20s.
Right, right, right.
I never hit that place again because I knew what the problem... Like, in my 20s, I didn't know it was about the eating.
Yeah, no.
Stupid. It's like, why did I not guess that my compulsion to eat 8 donuts and throw them up was normal?
But it's an illness, I think, the acknowledgement of that as well. It's like, it's not a... It's a manifestation of anxiety, unhappiness, whatever. There's something else that's not firing on all cylinders. And I think very early in my therapy about eating, I remember... my therapist saying, you know, when you feel like eating loads or whatever, even anytime you feel like eating, stop and ask yourself, what, you know, am I hungry? And if you're not hungry, because it takes ages if you've got an eating disorder, even if I would consider a life spent constantly in a cycle of dieting as an eating disorder, all of those help you, they disconnect you further and further and further from knowing what your own hunger and your own fullness look like.
I didn't know what hunger was until I went into recovery. Oh.
It's mad, but also then you're like, oh, well, now you need to try and work out all these different patches, and it's different hormonally, it's different for me, weather, you know, and I do think it's, and then once you realise if it's not bodily hunger, then why is it that you want to eat? What are you feeling? Blah, blah, blah. And there's nothing wrong with responding to emotional requests from your body to eat.
Yeah.
But it's that, and I had a really, in the end, I just had to say, I got to stop doing this because I want to eat so off. I was so happy to be at the, in the beginning of sorting and fixing this and having being able to let go of all these, you know, all the judgments of myself. I was under a therapist's orders to eat what I wanted when I wanted, but just to take a bit of time to stop and think about what I wanted, why I wanted it, and try and make a note. But I've said it on here before, but she was like, so tell me what emotions you feel that make you want to binge eat. And some of them were so obvious, you know, shit gig, you know, on my own in a hotel, lonely, relationship going down the shitter. You know,
there's admin.
Yeah, well, this is it. It's like just stress with work. There's all these really negative things. But there was one day where it was just slight relief. Elation as well can make me want to eat. But also, I'd been writing on something in town all day. I had a gig. I didn't particularly want to have a gig. The gig got cancelled. And I was like, hopping and skipping. There's no better feeling. Yeah. And that is light relief. That is not a big emotion. Mm. That is light relief. And I genuinely thought I could get a burrito on my way home for dinner. I nearly said my therapist's name then. I've got to stop writing down which emotions. It's all emotions. It's what I go to. I mean, I drink as well, and I smoke at the moment. But I, it's a part of your humanity to look for things to numb your emotions. And yeah. I think a lot of people don't understand that that's what eating in excess does. It's just like drinking. It's just like smoking.
My partners that I've had that know about it, they would think when I'm relapsing that it's because I'm sad.
No.
It's not sadness. It's any emotion.
Any emotion.
Any emotion.
Can level it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, it is... But they... Oh, I don't know. I was about to witter on with there. Thanks for going into the... for being so honest about it. I think it's fascinating.
I like
also it's only when you say out loud you go, yeah, I drink and I smoke it, and you go, oh god, I'm doing a lot of crushing emotions at the moment, but
yeah.
I'm having quite an adrenaline-y time work wise.
Yeah.
And I try and set myself like realistic goals in terms of kindness to myself. So
important.
I can only do two or three things well at once.
Yeah.
And so I'll be like, well, you know, if my eating's all right and I'm moving my body in a way that makes me feel good, I don't really mind drinking and smoking too much this month because I've got a very adrenaline-y work month. And then, you know, maybe I'll reset those things that come spring and I don't know. A lot of self-forgiveness goes on in my head.
Yeah, I have to. I work on not beating myself up about when my career started to really go somewhere.
Yeah.
And then... I always have said, and then I messed it up. I messed it up because I relapsed and I let my divorce take over. And I look back on that and I just think, maybe it wasn't for me.
Mm.
Maybe sometimes I was watching this comedy, a new comedy show on telly.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, just like the vibe of it and the, you know, just the whole, and I just thought, oh, it's such a relief to look at that show, that noisy show, and know that I have no place there.
Yeah.
That would not make me happy.
Yeah.
And in our job as well, you sort of, you think you should want to do all of the things that are available. And then I speak to some comedians who routinely turn down requests to be on panel shows.
Mm.
And I just think, and they're really successful.
Yeah.
And I just think that's the thing. It's FOMO. And that person that I've had to work through in my head, that person that felt sad that I wasn't booked on this anymore or that, is the same person who I remember when I was at university. It was Friday night. I was going out and I said to my flatmate, are you coming down the union? And she said, nah, do you know what? I was going to, but I'm reading this really good book and I want to stay home and finish it. And I was going out and I was all dressed up and I looked at her so envious.
Yeah.
Just thinking, I wish I had the courage to stay in.
Yeah.
Meeting all this food.
Yeah, it's really nice. We haven't even spoken about it, have we? That seitan was quite interesting.
Really?
Like we got katsu seitan, which I'd never tried before.
I'm a big fan of texture.
Yeah, and I liked it was quite like tough's the wrong word, that didn't make it sound nice. Chewy.
Yeah, robust.
It's just gluten, isn't it, apparently, I think, seitan. Carl Donnelly made seitan.
Oh, he's so clever with food,
isn't
he?
He is so clever. Clever food man. Okay, I'm going to ask you silly things.
Yes, please.
Okay. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, great. Nice quick answer.
I got a 5 minute rule. Go
on. Nice. Is there anything that you like? You know, people have a very specific ways of eating their Cadbury's cream egg.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you have a very particular way that you think it must be eaten?
100%.
Right. Oh, so great.
I can't eat something like. What are those chocolate biscuits that are you? Lisbon?
Lesbians.
You know the Lisbon chocolate biscuits?
You know those lesbian chocolate biscuits?
Lippin?
I know what you mean. Lieben or something.
Something like that. Where the chocolate...
With the chocolate square is on top of like an oblong... With like a frill around the biscuit.
That's the one. So anything like that, I have to bite the chocolates off. If I'm having a feast, like a Walls feast, I have to have all the chocolate off and then... Leave the solid chocolate in the middle to eat last.
Yes.
If I have a crunchy...
Who just chomps through a feast? I think you'd have to be some kind of...
really a strange
fucking
people.
Animal to just chomp
really
into
an
face.
Animal, a bad person.
Bet Boris Johnson eats a feast in bites.
He gets someone else to eat it for him. No, he doesn't, does he?
No, he doesn't.
So, and even if it's a...
I think we just fat-shamed Boris Johnson. He's like literally the one person that you're allowed.
Any chocolate, I have to eat around it and then on top and take layers off. And then, like, say if you're having something like a Milky Way, and so you're just left with the nougat.
How can you do that?
It's years of practice. I just nibble.
You must have such a dainty nibble.
I nibble.
Because it's so thin, that chocolate. Mm. I can understand how you could do it off the roof.
Yeah.
But the sides, there's literally no other option. Would you eat a person? As in, there's literally nothing else to eat. Would you eat a human?
Well, is it like on a Sunday afternoon or I'm stuck somewhere?
I've left it a relatively open scenario.
Life and death, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And if they died of natural causes.
Okay,
I wouldn't
fine.
Kill anyone to eat them.
No. Okay. Even if they were a terrible person?
I would not kill anyone to
really?
Eat them.
Really?
No.
Would you kill anyone for any reason?
No. I couldn't live with myself.
Okay. I have much worse rage. Yeah, I know that in my darkest, roast, red, misty moments that it would be possible, yeah.
I mean, if anyone harmed my kids or...
It would have to be a big bloke, you know. It would have to be someone... But I also just know from my road rage, I could kill someone. I could kill a man.
Oh, wow.
Definitely.
I don't get road rage.
Oh, wow.
It's only because I'm a new driver. Now, when I had children, when I became a mother, I started to have fantasies... like visualizations of myself murdering like a big bloke that hurt my kids.
Yeah. It's like, sort of to prepare yourself.
Yeah, that comes. Yeah. And I think, no, I could gouge someone's eyes out with my hands.
Yeah.
Should it come to that? I love where this conversation's gone.
it's never gone that way before. I feel like I did it.
And it's, and like, you know, you read something in the paper where someone's harmed a kid, you know, systematically.
Oh, God, no.
I just think, leave that person with me.
Yeah.
And I could.
I know I could, yeah. Even reading about anyone doing anything to a kid.
It drives you mad. I mean,
it does pique some kind of animal bit in you, doesn't it?
You know the eating thing?
Yeah.
I've had to, that thing where you have to stop yourself and ask, what emotion am I trying to suppress? It's quite tricky to find that point because there's only two points before that where it's like the point of no return.
Yeah.
Right? So...
Yes, absolutely.
So that's really tricky. But one thing I have really had to keep an eye on is my use of reading news.
Right.
Because, excuse me, I will meditate on bad news.
Right.
And hurtful news.
Yeah.
You know, a dog's been harmed a child's been hurt and I will just go, oh, this is so awful, I've got to really go, no. And then I think, no, this is an illness, there's absolutely no need for you to be here right now. And recently, I have found, not recently, it's been a while, Twitter is part of my compulsive disease.
Right.
It really, really is, because reading Twitter is one thing, but writing stuff and reading replies and responding... and going down into an absolute pit.
Right.
For some people, it's like something to, you know, pass some time when you're having a poo.
Mm.
But it can eat my time and it can affect my... I've never come off Twitter happier than when I went on it.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well,
so now I'm tweeting.
In my head, I'm only on it for work. I don't think I do find... I can completely understand why social media and the news would be triggering. I don't think it is for me in the sense that two things that can happen on there, though, are any trolling, even very light, quite cheerful, you know, I'd like a constructive debate level, which isn't really trolling. That can send me into pits of sort of internal analysis.
Yeah.
And seeing a picture of me I didn't ask anybody to take, usually on stage, that those two can...
Yeah, when people just go, oh, just about to watch Jess on stage and then take a picture and then you're sort of like,
I don't want to have to think about what I look like on stage. I don't think it's that important for my job. I mean, our expressions are and, you know, the way we use our body in our work is.
Yeah.
But I sort of fundamentally think there's something really unhelpful about how much we're all having photographs taken of us all the time and all taking pictures of us. Not that I'm very torn on this because I think, of course, bring on... bring on the feminist side of this, that is, we should enjoy looking at ourselves, whatever body we're in. We fucking should.
Mm.
But should we enjoy looking at ourselves all that much at all? At all? I don't. I think it's a big ask for ourselves.
I'm in my tum.
A terrible curse blights humanity, where if you touch anything green, your limb just flops off and vanishes. It's shit news for limbs and people, but even worse news for green things, which were already in danger from climate hell. Now we start to fear them. Everything we fear now, from football pitches to most apples to large parts of Wales, become terrifying and abandoned and increasingly demolished. It's horrible. But amazingly, the curse agrees to shut that nonsense up and stop it, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, do 10,000 word searches in a row whilst walking round and round and round and round and round and round a small park. It sounds impossible, but you do it. Okay, so your reward is the adulation of all humanity for all time, because you've saved us all from the terrible curse. But your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. But because you've been so consumed by the word searches and the stroll around the park, you're fucking hungry. Okay, so I want this feast of your dreams to be in the context of having hunger. So, and I don't want it to be anything ethical. I couldn't give a fuck about whether it's healthy. And also nothing in the answer has to be possible. It can be made up dream things. I'd love to know in your dream situation what you'd eat, what you'd drink, and if there's a who, with and where, then who, with and where, please.
Oh, wow. Okay, first of all, this is something that I would do gladly because I love gardening. I love gardening and walking, so actually, can I do it anyway?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, the feast of my dreams has got to be with my brother.
Nice.
Because eating is our communal thing. We both get food.
Yes.
And we both have the same taste in food and people. And it would have to be, I love using my hands when I eat. I'm a very emotional, like hand-to-mouth person. Yeah. So that's why I like, you know, Chinese duck pancakes. I get in there. I don't use forks or spoons. And I can do the really sort of clever Middle Eastern way of using your fingers properly, not shoveling it in, but there's a system. You know how people learn to use chopsticks?
Yeah.
You can learn to eat with your hands.
To pinch
very gently, very cleanly. And I learned that when I was a kid in Iran.
Wow.
So I think it would have to be a mixture of I love really incredible Chinese food. If it's done well.
Yes.
It's amazing. And you can touch it. So something involving ducks and pancakes.
Great.
And I love chili. Some sort of chili beef. I am going to become a vegan again soon. Some sort of, just for having this fantasy, some sort of chili beef that's also been sprinkled with like the god of crispiness.
Ooh.
Crispy, crunchy is my thing.
Nice.
Wet is not my thing, which is why I don't like noodles and soup. So if there's any noodles and soup, this fantasy is ruined.
Okay.
So crispy, crunchy, Chinesey, and then somehow fused with the heavenly herbs of Persian cuisine.
Oh.
There's got to be some heavenly herbs in there, and my mother has to cook it because her cooking is divine. And even as an atheist, I mean that in its literal sense. World's worst atheist. Yes, so I think it will be eating with my brother. This sounds really rude now because my mother's not actually invited. But food that my mother has cooked along with the best Chinese chef in the universe.
Oh my God, what an amazing answer.
Because Chinese, you can get aubergine, you can get crunchiness, all the different textures in Chinese food. And also with Persian food, the way they cook the rice is they have like maybe half an inch base at the bottom of the rice that crisps up.
Oh, fit like a bibimbap. That's like a Korean dish that you cook in a bowl and you put cooked rice, maybe like some raw beef, mince or whatever, some vegetables.
And it crunches.
And then you put an egg in and the stone bowl is hot and you whiz it up and the egg crusts the rice to the bottom. So you get like a crusty rice is one of my favourite things in the universe. Yeah, crusty rice.
You've got to come another time when you're not working and I'm going to make you food.
I'd love to come and have some. Let's do that. Please.
The minute my book's finished. I've never. Your toy's finished.
Yes.
Right, yes, so that would be my heavenly food.
Talk to me about your novel.
Well. Well, Doctor, my novel. So I wrote my first novel, Nina's Not Okay.
Mm.
I wrote, and it's about an 18-year-old alcoholic called Nina.
Uh-huh.
And so many journalists asked me, why did you specifically make her an alcoholic? And the thing was, it was my first novel, and they say write about what you know.
Yeah.
And I couldn't imagine a character that didn't have addiction disorders. Yeah. And because for me, it took me a long time to properly understand that some people don't.
Amazing.
Some people aren't addicts.
Oh.
And that was incredible to me. Like, I would hang out with people, and they were, I went to Amsterdam with a friend when I was about 24, and we went somewhere, and she got a sandwich, and she offered half of her sandwich to me. She goes, well, do you want half?
Mm.
And I was like, I can't do that. I can't be so ambivalent and blasé about food to just like, we'll share them. What? Now I can. It's amazing. It's amazing that I can. But back then, or like people would say, it's my birthday dinner. We're all going to go out to dinner. What? Well, already I'm panicking.
Yeah.
Because what will I eat? What if the person next to me has more chips than me? I cannot enjoy communal. I couldn't enjoy communal food.
Oh, God.
So sad. And I'll make up for it now. It's all fine. So Nina's Not Okay is a book about an addict, and the book was massively based on my own early 20s.
Right.
A lot of the experiences were experiences I had in my early 20s.
Right.
But I made her younger, I made her a teenager. Yeah. And also the people that reacted to it, the publishers, because it was a young woman in an 18-year-old, they called it a young adult's novel.
Oh, God.
And that's not how I wrote it. Yeah. I wrote it for the 90s generation. And sure enough, women of my generation were really related to it. But then I got avalanches of messages on Facebook from addicts.
Oh, God.
Addicts, parents of addicts. And somebody wrote to me the most beautiful letter and just said that, I know that in your publicity you skirt around the issue, but you can't have described Nina the way you did if you hadn't been where she is.
Oh no, it
makes me cry. But for me, that book made up for losing my 20s.
Yeah,
that was my way of getting some of it back and doing something creative out of it. So that book meant an awful lot to me.
Yeah,
and still does.
Nina is not okay.
No. It's better by the end. I mean, no spoilers.
Okay. No spoilers. I still need to read it. What an incredible guest. Whoomph. Please get your hands on Shappi's book, Nina is Not Okay. I know I will be. Follow Shappi on social media. It's at Shappi Khorsandi. I'm sure you're already follow her. But if not, it's Shappi Khorsandi. Go and see her stand-up. She's really funny. You'll find out about it from her Twitter, most up to date. I'm sure she's doing a mini tour soon of her current show, Skittish Warrior, and a new show she'll be working up in Edinburgh, and it's going to be called Inner Stormzy, which is such a great title. Come and see me on tour if you want. My show Hench is going all around the world. Well, Melbourne, and then the UK and Ireland. Go to my website, jessicafosterq.com, for tickets. Also for tickets to live shows of Hoovering and any other particularly important work in progresses I've got coming up and stuff like that. Follow the podcast on social media. It's at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on there, at Jessica Fosterq on Instagram, Twitter. Tweet me, contact me, or email me through my website, again, jessicafosterq.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.